I know that some of you are psychologically oriented and some of you are esoterically, metaphysically oriented. For the metaphysical oriented people, this has 22 emblems, like the major arcana of the tarot deck. And it begins with the magician and it ends with the fool. That is to say, it begins with the magician as a point and unfolds into the vanishing of the zero. Okay, figure one. We start in the lower region. I do not have chalk. We start down here. This is the first figure. This bird-like man with the arch over it. And the arch over it is just an emblematic way of expressing this, because actually the Mediwegan, the lodge, has no ceiling. One has to be able to see the clouds. This has to do with the engendering of spiritual presence in the initiatory lodge. Because nothing can happen until the spiritual presence is there. And if that does not occur, then nothing can be done. And the way that one determines that is not subjectively at all, it's very objective. Only those who are initiated into this society, notice the importance of the society. Notice the stress here that spiritual presence is not just a function of a single person inside of them, but also occurs in the context, as the context for the sacred society, the sacred group. They're related together. The only expression that still survives in the modern world of this, from the primordial Western expression of this, is in the Quaker meeting. In the Quaker meeting, no one is able to begin to speak until they feel spiritual presence in themselves, and that only happens when everyone who is present feels that spiritual presence. It's in the individual and it's in the group together at the same time. That's to say, it doesn't come to one and then spread to another, but it's there concomitantly. The term I wish to use is concomitant. This is like, incidentally, the proof of the seal of the sacredness of the group. That if any one of them feels it, all of them will feel it at the same time. This is the way in which religious communities held together in peace and war through fire and ice forever, and thus could recognize somebody who is a member of the group from someone who wasn't. And you didn't need to have any kind of external identification. You don't need uniforms. It's a spiritual tone, and it's unmistakable. You could never mistake it. Because when the melody is humming in you, it's humming in the air of the group. It's like that. So that this first emblem, this is, let's see how schoolcraft, a medicine lodge filled with the presence of the Great Spirit, who, it is affirmed, came down with wings to instruct the Indians in these ceremonies. Then the chant that goes with this one, the Mida, or priest, sings, and this is the translation, "The Great Spirit's Lodge, you have heard of it, I will enter it." While this is sung and repeated, the priest shakes his shishigun, and each member of the society holds up one hand in a beseeching manner. All stand without dancing. The drum is not struck during this introductory chant. Now, in the ancient Egyptian, I hate to use the term rendition, I have to. The ancient Egyptian rendition of this, what was shaken at the beginning was the sistrum. Sistrum. And what is, and usually it was a woman. That is to say, she, it was Isis, as that woman, shook the sistrum, and the sistrum breaks up the scattered everyday sound and makes a sacred chaos. And out of that sacred chaos, when it comes back together, reformed into the sacred chanting language, then that whole context of sound and silence has been transformed from something which is profane, or rather something which was just natural into something which is now supernatural and charged specifically with the way in which we're going to do it. In this case, the Shishi Gwin of the Mida priest, like this. Figure two, a candidate for admission. This is an initiation ceremony. A candidate for admission, crowned with feathers, holds, usually holds under his arm, holding, suspended to his arm, an otter skin pouch. Here's the otter skin pouch. In the diagram, in the ritual Memnonic emblem, it's like suspended, but usually it's held, was held under the arm. We'll go into this next week a little bit, but the reason it's an otter skin is that the whole beginning of the initiation sequence, in terms of the larger action, begins with an otter. The image is that of an otter's head coming up out of an ocean. It was generally Lake Superior, but the image is that here's a vast, limitless body of water, and in the midst of the water, the first thing that occurs is the head of the otter that comes up. It's that bindu. It's that ekagrata, but it's in reverse, you see. Instead of disappearing into the ocean of the all, it appears out of the ocean of the all. And then when it disappears and when it surfaces again, each time that it surfaces, it makes a wave form configuration which becomes the core of the mandala that's going to unfold. A candidate for admission in two, crowned with feathers and holding suspended to his arm an otter skin pouch with the wind represented as gushing out of one end. He sings, repeating after the priest, now all dancing with the accompaniment of the drum and the rattle. I have always loved that I seek. I go into the new green leaf lodge. Now we, because of our mental habits, tend right away to hear this metaphorically. It's just it's a characteristic of our expanded consciousness that we do so. On the ritual level, there's no metaphor. On the ritual level, the metaphor occurs in slow motion by the continued ritual action. You don't know what this means until you just keep on doing it, and then you find out that way. Whereas we tend to jump the gun, to pre-guess through metaphorical jumps. Figure three marks a pause. Figure three is this little, if you excuse me, this little, it's almost like a vaginal kind of shape, but doesn't signify anything except to pause. So says Schoolcraft. What it signified, what it brought in, was that this is the core energy which is now available. That portal is available. It isn't just a pause, like a comma, like punctuation, but it's an indication that we've reached a threshold of profundity. How was that threshold reached? The Mita priest and the candidate for initiation have each sung a song. And in that parallel is a space. And it's that space that's given that shape. I use that shape because in nature, in human nature, it's the primordial shape of the advent of birth, really, finally. Four. Notice the hand, the arm, the hand holding the mandala-like self symbol that comes right after that. This is four. I should have some chalk in it. I don't. Can you visualize that? This is four. Four, a man holding a dish in his hand. Schoolcraft says a dish. There's no way. It's not a dish. In the illustration, it's a circle that has three levels, and there is a geometric penetration of three wedges into the center, and at every other level there is a kind of a contoured coloring. So it's like a mandala with sixes and threes working instead of twos and fours and eights. It's like that. A man holding that mandala in his hand and decorated with magic feathers on his wrists. Why on the wrist? Because that's where the mobility is. Feathers, able to fly. So that mobility is celestial, like that. I'm using reductive language, which is bad, but I'm doing it to give you a so that as students for this, you can begin to approach it. It's not good language to use. Reductive language like this is not good. All of this, the fact that he is able to hold this with a feathered wrist, indicates his character as master of the feast. That is, he is able to express this, is the master of the feast, the master of the initiation. Everyone then sings at this juncture, not the initiator. Notice the initial song is by the Meta priest. The response is by the candidate. Then there's this so-called pause. Then there's this phenomenon we're all saying, everyone who's in the society sings, I shall give you a share, my friend. Ne mao ta o ne go ne kwan. I shall give you a share, my friend. This is very profound language. The candidate for initiation is going to be admitted to the society. Going to become a part of us in this arcane way. Figure five, another lodge. Notice the intelligence about this. One, two, three, four. One, another lodge. Five, a lodge apart from that in which the Mita men are assembled, having a, he calls it a vapor bath within it. It's a sweat lodge. The elder men go into this lodge, and during the time of their taking the sweat, or immediately preceding it, they tell each other certain secrets relative to the arts they employ in the Metawiwin. The six heavy marks at the top of the lodge indicate the steam escaping from the bath. I get my intuition is to say to someone that this is in the original Alexandrian alchemy in the, say, 2nd, 3rd century AD. There was an alchemical vessel that was invented by one of the great Jewish women of Alexandria who just went by the name of Marie. And in alchemy, this is called the bain-marie, the water bath implement, which is used in alchemy. She was the inventor of that, and it's this sort of thing. It's for this stage of initiation. There are three orders of men in the society. Called the first order is the Mida, the second order the Sagama, S-A-U-G-E-M-A-U, and the third is the Ogima. It's interesting, a little vignette here, how desecrated language can be. When I was about 7, I was put into a YMCA camp in northern Michigan called Ogimaki. Comes from this sacred part of this society, the Ogima. But of course the society that I grew up in didn't know that. Had no idea at all. No idea at all. And it is in these secret exchanges of art, or rather the communication of unknown secrets from the higher to the lower orders, that they are exalted from one degree to another. That is to say, not only is a new candidate coming in to be admitted to the society, but everybody in the society is moving up a degree. Everyone is. So as the candidate comes in, everyone moves up. Everyone increases together, so that everyone, in some sense, is an initiate for the next level. So they're all initiates together. And one of the esoteric realizations for the new candidate is that everyone is growing together. That's what makes us together, is that we are all growing together. Nobody's in authority staying comfortably at the top and everyone else having to come up the ladder, you see. Everyone's growing together. Notice the flow aspect. Notice the continuity. Notice how the psyche of such people has a continuity from generation to generation all the time. One is always flowing together. There isn't a geometric hierarchy where you get to the top and then you kick the other people down. There's no view from the 40th floor in this psyche at all. Is very, very interesting because it's true the world rounded for all time. All primordial peoples have this intelligence about each other, know this about each other, and thus respect each other in a kind of a really primordial way, because there's no disembodiment of the other person from the flow of one's own life. The priest then sings, and all the following, and beating time on their drums with small sticks while they move around the lodge with a measured tread, moving in from east to west. I go into the bath. I go into the sweat, it should be. I blow my brother strong. My song, my singing, our singing is like helping this candidate to substantiate himself in our society, in our community. The sweat is a solution. It's an alchemical solution. And the drying off by the breath of the song, by the wind, congeals one, gels one, substantiates one. One is transformed, one is dissolved and coagulated. See? One's come out of the natural into the transformation into the society. It's like that. Notice that there was wind coming out of the otter skin. It's like there's a primordial breath. In the beginning, what is in the beginning? In the beginning is the breath of God. Is the beginning. And out of that then comes dry land. Before that is the void. There's always that kind of primordiality. Figure 6, the arm of the priest or the master of ceremonies who conducts the candidate, represented always in connection with the next figure, the seventh. So the sixth and the seventh go together. The seventh, the goods or the presents given as a fee of admission by the novitiate. What he gives away. It's not so much that he's giving to you, but that he or she understands the givingness, understands what giving is. Figure 8 is the Mita tree. The curved projection from the trunk denotes that this part of the tree supplies medicine. The root part supplies medicine. And the song that goes with this, what? My life, my single tree, we dance around you. The tree of life. Figure 9, a stuffed crane skin employed as a medicine bag. Crane related to the otter. An otter skin, a crane skin. By shaking this in the dance, what comes out of the crane skin are small birds. Schoolcraft, because of his Victorian English calls them plovers, British, and other small birds. And he says it's by sleight of hand trickery they're made to jump out of it. But it's not like sleight of hand trickery. One has to know a little bit of legerdemain in order to understand this. Legerdemain is hand magic, right? Magician stuff. Stage magician stuff. If the hand moves in a certain way, if it moves in a kind of a staccato, very quickly, the eye cannot follow every movement. All sleight of hand tricks are done that way because the eye cannot follow every movement. The hand is literally quicker than the eye. And if you give little indications of feint to the eye, and have very quick, subtle other movements, you can pull something out and they'll never see the hand reach in to pull it out. All they will see is that the hand is there. I can't do this. Mr. Hall can do this magnificently. When my daughter was little, about 4 years old, he used to entertain her by doing magic tricks, and he was about 80 at that time, and he could still do it so well, and you could not follow it. It looked like he's just holding the thing, and all of a sudden, something appears there in the hand. Because a good magician can, this kind of motion is what is here. It isn't trickery to deceive, but it's legerdemain to show that not as all what it appears. See? And the small birds being released from the crane skin are like the air being, the wind being released from the crane, the otter skin. He calls it, these, the novitiate, are taught, spring from the bag by the strong power of necromancy. imparted by the skill and supernatural power of the operator. Well, it's Victorian hocus-pocus language that he's using here. It's not very good language. This is one of the prime arts of the dance. And the song, the chant that goes with this Memnonic emblem, I wish to see them appear, that has grown, I wish them to appear. Notice that the syntax here confuses singular and plural. Schoolcraft doesn't pick this up. The birds as an ensemble are an appearance of that which we wish to appear, the spirit. It's that the spiritual presence which has been engendered here has woven itself into the words and the ritual actions so that now it's able to come out. So that then we have the arrow in heaven. An arrow in the supposed circle of the sky represents a charmed arrow which by the power of the Mida of the person owning it is capable of penetrating the entire circle of the sky and accomplishing the object for which it is shot out of the bow. Now you can see that Schoolcraft doesn't understand this. He was told, but he didn't hear. The chant with this emblem, what are you saying, you Mida man? This is the Mida bone. In other words, the bones of the medicine magic are here in this action, the arrow in the circle of the sky. And then we come to the very center, the fulcrum of the whole chant. We come to the 11th of the 22. And the 11th is up here. It's a species of small hawk. The ka kike, the species of small hawk, swift of wing and capable of flying high into the sky. The actual fact is that in this part of North America, this small hawk was the bird that could fly out of sight. Remember I talked about the eagle? And like in England, the song of the lark? What it is like something which can go into the sky out of sight. So that right at from spiritual presence being engendered, it has gone through this woven convolution to the point to where we can now show that it goes out of sight. It not only manifests here, but is everywhere, even beyond what we could possibly see or understand. It is immanent and it is infinite. So that the whole first part of this memnonic emblem sequence is in a ritual comportment to engender this. And then the second half begins with the 12th figure. The sky or celestial hemisphere. Notice now that this is not a lodge, but this is the whole sky. This is the whole dome of the sky. Now imagine this is the whole dome of the sky, and this is the great spirit looking over outside of the whole dome of the sky. This is the great spirit who then looks over. Notice the unlimited, infinite capacity of the great spirit. The great spirit is not under the sky, not within the sky, is beyond the sky. The dome of the sky. Notice the bird which can fly out of sight into the sky is the trigger that calls forth that. Unless one can send one's voice beyond the sky, then the great spirit beyond does not hear, and one does not have that. Here we've engendered the spiritual presence in the lodge. Here this is a cosmic spiritual presence. We've allowed it to amplify so that what happened in the lodge here now happens in the universe. the sky or celestial hemisphere with the symbol of the Great Spirit looking over it, a manito's arm is raised up from the earth in a supplicating posture. It's like this. Sometimes it's like this, but the ritual emblem is just to show one hand. That's all you have to do. But it's like this, the hands that are up like this. Here's the song. Here's the chant. All around the circle of the sky, I hear the Spirit's voice. All around the circle of the sky, I hear the Spirit's voice. We're singing with our voice, and we can hear the Spirit's voice. All around the circle of the sky is coming from beyond the sky. It's like in that Nag Hammadi treatise, that hermetic treatise, the eighth reveals the ninth. On the eighth level of silence, man can hear the angels singing on the ninth level. If he had not matured to the point of silence at the eighth, he would not be able to hear the angels singing on the ninth. The eighth reveals the ninth. If the eighth is anything at all in itself, it will not reveal the ninth. The eighth panel in Takuan's ox herding pictures is blank. Is this coming through somewhat? I hope it is. Trying to show you universal spiritual wisdom. Always is recognizable once one has educated oneself in a real way. And if you do it just through an imaginative reconstruction, all you get is like fantasy fictions, which don't do anything except make it harder for you to just to be who you are. The next figure denotes a pause in the ceremonies. Say this is a pause in the ceremonies. Just like they said this was a pause in the ceremonies. It's not that this is so much a pause in the ceremonies, but this is an indication, half a plant, as it were, or a feather, a single feather. It's an indication of a hiatus. It's an indication that one does nothing here. It's not that nothing is done, but what one does is nothing. One lets the pause happen. It's like the dancers in a line who are ready to make all those steps and then raise their foot and then don't make the step. And if they all do that together, that pause together is an incredible place. That place that's made, that space that's made, is in fact the key to the poetic structure of the whole sequence. It's like the great English poet, a Welsh poet, excuse me, Dylan Thomas, said a good poem has cracks and chinks in it to let the lightning and thunder come through. It's like that. So that's what that is. The 13th denotes a pause. Notice that's the 13th. The 8th and the 13th are very similar in that sense that they're not something, but they're pointedly pauses. They're pointedly spaces. You have to allow for those spaces to occur. So that the intervaling is very important in there. And the 8th and the 13th places are always very, very significant. In the Gnostic myths, the celestial realms always go to the 14th heaven. Why the 14th? Not because of double sevens. That's kind of a stupid associative level. But because the 13th, in order to indicate that its importance is of a peculiar non-nature, one has a 14th to show that it has occurred even though it hasn't counted. So it's like that. is very esoteric. So that when you count by 14s, you count in a very esoteric way. It's like the Gospel of Matthew is very powerful mandala of truth. And in the very beginning, Matthew gives the lineage of Jesus in terms of 14 generations at a time. It's like a very comprehensive way. Someone who understands symbolic truth sees that, and you're in the hands of a masterful expression of truth, because it moves in just those segments, just like that. Figure 14, then, Amida tree. Where did we have it before? Notice, it's there again. Amida tree. That's this tree up here. Just the tree. 14, Amida tree. The idea represented as a tree animated by magic or spiritual power. Not only do we have the tree of life now, we have a tree of knowledge. We have a tree of life, we have a tree of knowledge. We have the animation of it by spiritual power. It's called the Wabino tree. It dances. Figure 15 is a stick, just this figure here. It's the stick that's used to beat the drum. And the sound is, the song is, the chant, how rings aloud the drumsticks sound. Not the drum sound, but the drumsticks sound. I'm sorry it's taking so long. It just takes a while to get this out. Are you all exhausted? Yeah? Hungry and exhausted and tired? Just think how difficult it is when you have to do it for real. And the pressure is relentless. Mm-hmm. Many are called, few make it. Watch what happens in this transition. 15, after the tree of knowledge, after the energizing, the bones of life now become the bones of knowledge. Here's the stick that beats the drum. Here's the same shape, but instead of the stick, it's the arch of the sky. It's the arch of the sky, and all that's there is half the sky in the same shape as the stick that beats the drum. The stick of the drum is now comprehensive, and the arch of the sky, half the sky is noon. But it's also a ritual emblem of this completeness. And standing at the head of the arch of the sky is a man. Half the celestial hemisphere, an Indian walking upon it, the idea symbolized as the sun pursuing his diurnal course till noon. You can see that Schoolcraft doesn't get it. But the song tells it all. The chant is here, I walk upon half the sky. You see, consciousness open to its zenith is like the full sun at noon. One can move from the drumstick's comprehension to the comprehension of the sun at noon. One walks on half the sky. Figure 17, then, look at this magnificent mnemonic emblem that comes out. 17, the great spirit filling all space with his beams. It's not just the sun, but it's the divine behind the mask of the sun. The sun is powerful, but it's only the mask of the great spirit. And when you can walk on half the sky and see as the sun would see at noon, then you can see behind the mask of the sun. Then the great spirit filling all space with his beams and enlightening the world by the halo of his head. What is the halo of his head? Is all of the light that there is. He is here depicted as the God of thunder and lightning, which indeed he is. The chant, I sound all round the sky that can hear me. Figure 18 is a single-headed drum. It's a drum. You shall hear the sound of my drum. Drumstick, the half the sky, the great spirit comes out, then the drum, the drumstick, and then the drum. Notice that there's a symbiosis there. Now the drum is going to open up. The shaman's drum is always the important vehicle because it's the cadence by which he makes his secret journey, his spiritual journey. Figure 18 is the drum. Figure 19 is the tambourine, ornamented with feathers and a wing, indicative of it being prepared for a sacred use. A drum and a tambourine. The instruments are coming together. The drum is the rhythm, and the tambourine is a rhythm in a different kind of a mode. They're going to be able to synchronize. Figure 20, a raven. A raven. A raven is a North American Hermes. It's the Spiritus Mercurius. A raven, the skin and feathers of this bird are worn as head ornaments. The skin and feathers. And the song is, I sing the raven that has brave feathers. That is to say, a person who began here engendering spiritual presence now is the direct emissary. He is the hermetic messenger himself, is the raven himself. And 21, a crow, the wings and head of which are worn as a headdress, a raven and a crow. I am the crow, I am the crow, his skin is my body. A raven and a crow together. And then figure 22 is a medicine lodge, a leader or master of the Mita society, standing with his drumstick raised, holding in his hands the clouds and the celestial sphere. Notice that he is moved, so that the great spirit is now in the person. In the beginning, the spiritual presence was engendered as something coming in from the outside. Now it is something which the Mita priest lives in his own person. So that the initiate, the candidate who's gone through this, realizes that he too does this. He too in his life does this. So that one is very careful of how one lives then. Because you are embodying, you are the spiritual presence of the great spirit. Why demean it? Why live in such a way that you would not express it fully? You are this, so live accordingly. It's not live properly, but live accordingly. You notice how the authoritarian tone is not there. How the tone is realization rather than command. Instead of, you should be good, it's that you are this, why would you be any other way? So one lives in accordance with the Great Spirit. Well, thank you for your attention. We'll do some more next week.